episode of Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank Arcuri.
And thank you, as always, for listening here on WGR550.com. Oh, man. I mean, there's something... It's an interesting, bad time to be a Sabres fan right now, I guess. I mean, what can we really say at this point? What can you really say at this point about the Buffalo Sabres that hasn't been said?
I feel like it's all been said.
I think it has not all been said, Frank, because we're going to get to it.
All right. Get to it.
But first.
Yeah.
Comes on the heels of losing games to the Rangers and the Devils, two very not-so-good teams, where you dominated puck possession for the entire third period trying to tie the goal, tie the game with a goal, and they give up the goal with less than 6 minutes left in each game. That ends up being the win, like the insurance marker. Very eerily similar games from the Sabres. Phil Housley calls them soft after the Rangers loss, and I didn't really see a team that had problems with effort in that game. And then the same thing with the Devils game. They played relatively well. It was just a lack of finish that doomed them to lose to Corey Schneider, who suddenly has won twice in a row after not winning in more than a year.
Yeah.
Look at you. Good on you, buddy. That's his first start that he's won in over a year, though, because he came in relief and got the win for New Jersey against Minnesota. So Buffalo has had a rough stretch of it, rough go of it, haven't been able to win consecutive games since December. And something that has not been pointed out that often, they've won consecutive games only four different times.
This year, yeah.
Only twice in October. Then there was the streak.
Yep.
And then there was two games in December.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the only time that they've won consecutive games. So they're not a very streaky team. They are literally just up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down.
You know...
And as everyone, up and down as this season has been, they still sit
6 points behind.
Now, along with a new guest,
Philly,
in the Philadelphia Flyers.
You know, with everything that's been going on with this season, and everyone wants to point fingers saying, oh, it's this guy's fault. It's somebody's fault that the team is bad. Nobody is talking about. There's one thing that is going on with them that no one has mentioned. They're an inconsistent team. As you just said, up, down, up, down, up, down. What's that a sign of? Inconsistency.
That's literally inconsistency.
That's literally the definition of inconsistency.
Because at least if you're losing a bunch of games in a row, like they lost five games in a row after, like shortly after the streak.
Yeah.
Like you could look at that as they're streaky. You know what streaky is? Not consistent.
Yeah.
If they were consistently putting up losses, they would just be a bad team.
So, everyone, when the team loses, everyone wants to say, oh, you got to point the fingers at a person or multiple people and saying that's the reason.
You know what the problem
is? No one is talking about the fact that the team is inconsistent. No one wants to mention that. Everyone wants to say it's somebody's fault, not this team has this in them.
Quite frankly, it's just they're not good enough to win on a consistent basis.
They're just not good enough. I mean, let's be real with the Sabres. This was the main thing going into the year. Going into the season, consistency was going to be an issue going into the year.
My thing was, can you just make it more entertaining than last year? Those were my words heading into this season.
Yes, and consistency was my thing.
And guess what? They've checked my box.
Yeah.
We're in a playoff race still somehow.
Yeah.
Despite the inconsistencies of this team.
Yeah.
But they're more fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'm pounding the table every, like, 2 minutes because there's an elite scoring chance that is being flubbed right now.
Consistency was my thing going into the year because you have a relatively young team. Your captain's 21 now.
He's only 21, jeez.
He's 21, or just turned 22, something like that. You have an 18-year-old first overall pick. You have a 19-year-old kid who's playing second-line center.
Eh.
19, 20 years old, something like that.
No, no, no. Oh. He's playing third-line center.
Well, that's the idea.
Not even originally. That's the ice time.
Okay, sure.
That's the ice time that's been given out.
But you have a 19-year-old rookie in his first time playing in the NHL grind. And your 18-year-old first overall pick is playing in his first year in North America. You have a 20-year-old in Tage Thompson who was bounced up and down his first year. I know that's it for the young guys. Obviously, Pilot came up. You have C.J. Smith came up. C.J. Smith's 24. But you have these young players playing key roles on this team. And Reinhardt's 22, 23 years old, playing key roles on this team. Ristolainen's still young. He's 24. You have these younger players playing key roles. They're prone to make mistakes. They're going to happen. And the mistakes are going to outweigh the positives because they have to learn to fix them at the NHL level. And that takes a while to do. It takes, for a lot of players, it takes a full season. It might take that.
Mm-hmm.
Rasmus Dahlin's not a finished product, by all means. He's not.
And that's terrifying.
He's had up and down. Yeah, and he's having a really good rookie year. He's had nights where he hasn't been the best. He's had nights where he's amazing. It's going to happen. But as he gets older, the amazing nights are going to be more and more often because he's going to learn to adjust to the NHL grind. He's going to learn to adjust to the NHL, to how other players adjust to him. And Lawrence Pilot's going to be the same way. The biggest thing that this team, as I said, consistency is the biggest issue with this team. And us as fans, I get it. We're sick of it. It's like the same thing with the Bills before they made the playoffs for the first time in forever. We're sick of it. They're sick of the team being poorly managed, poorly coached. I get it.
Part of that also has to do with a 10-game winning streak that put them atop the league for a while.
Yeah, for like a week. And that's why I continue to ask the question. If the 10-game winning streak never happens, but the record remains the same, are we still having this conversation? That's why I continually ask that question.
Yes, because you're in the mix.
But I don't think it's as fierce as what...
No. No, it's not.
As what it is right now.
No, it's not.
Exactly. You have the conversation of this team is still in it. Not... This team is done. Fire everybody. Because they were on top of the league standings at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're on an epic collapse.
Now let's talk about that, actually, as a matter of fact. There's some interesting thoughts, though, about Housley and coaches, and is it the right time to fire them? I've said it, that I'm not a guy that wants the organization to go ahead and fire a coach after two seasons yet again. There have been counterpoints given to me last night with the Sabres radio network crew of Brian Koziel, Kyle Powell,
yeah,
and myself, and Nick Lozanovsky, we were all talking about this, both on air and off air, different exchanges with this stuff. And it was brought to my attention that Kyle Powell, a Flyers fan,
yeah,
mentions that Philadelphia has caught Buffalo after they fired Hextall.
Yeah.
And they brought their guy up from the AHL.
Yeah.
Which then an interesting name came up to me.
Chris Taylor.
If the Sabres were to make a move, and they wanted to make a move, like say they wanted to do it, like they're not happy with what's going on right now.
And they would fire Housley, let's say, tomorrow.
And the only move that would be proper for me
is Chris Taylor.
Is Chris Taylor gets promoted.
I would agree.
And they get a trial run of what he is like.
I would agree.
As a head coach.
I would agree.
That's the only reason I would see Housley getting fired right now.
I would agree. Yes.
So it becomes this. For me, I think Chris Taylor's on your short list if you need a new coach.
I think that would be the same next year.
And it would be the same next year because if the Sabres get off to a poor start under Housley next year, you better bet that that's going to be the case. He will get fired if they get off to a bad start next year and they don't make the playoffs this year, because that's not going to cut it anymore.
I also feel like...
But Chris Taylor...
Well,
I broke a chair.
I also feel like the only way Housley gets fired is if Bottrell, and only Bottrell, thinks that he's holding the team back.
And that's
that was the reason Hacksoff got fired.
Now here's my thing. Again, if they don't fire Housley this season, which I don't think they will.
No.
Bottrell makes another offseason worth of moves. And if the Sabres get off to a poor start, you better bet the GM is going to think, I did another offseason's worth of moves, and we're starting and off how bad?
And you're still not giving me results.
Yes.
I agree.
That's how it would absolutely happen. If the Sabres get off to a poor start next year, they're not staying the same roster-wise. They're not. They have money that they could spend.
Yes.
They're going to go ahead and use it. There are going to be different players on this roster next year.
They're
going to
re-sign Jeff Skinner. Let's be real. They're going to re-sign Jeff Skinner.
They have draft capital.
Don't be worried about it.
They have draft capital. They could or could not use it during the NHL draft.
I think they need to use it on prospects. We could get into that as the spring, when the spring comes around and we're talking about that. My stance right now is they need to draft. I think they need to use all of them to draft. We could talk about it later. But I agree with unless there's something there that they can do.
Well, let me just bring up an example that continues to this discussion. For example, they go and use one of those first round picks and they get a guy that a lot of people were talking about, like say Charlie Coyle, to help fill at the top nine a little bit. You've got Casey Milstead coming in for his second year of out of college. You've got Tage Thompson coming in another year wiser. CJ Smith, Victor Olofsson, Alex Nylander are all guys that should be threatening the roster next year. You don't know what it's going to look like, but you do know this. It's going to be different, and it's going to try to be improved. And that is why, if the Sabres get off to a poor start next year, we are looking at a new head coach. And that's where Chris Taylor comes into play, because next year is another year closer for Olofsson, another year closer. Hopefully Nylander's on the damn roster. CJ Smith is on the roster at that point. You'd want to see what your assistant coach, who's coached some of these guys in Rochester, can do with those guys in the NHL. And that's where I think the most interesting part of the discussion from last night went.
Okay, I'll talk about the reason why I want the team to keep all the picks that they have, and even get more. When you look at their prospect system, and I'm talking just the guys that they have signed right now, there is a lack of 18 to 21-year-olds, 22-year-olds, I'll say. Alex Nylander is one. Mitaj Pekar is another. Not much else after. That's my big... Rasmus Asplund's another guy. That's three. Three guys right there that are between 18 and 22 in your prospect system. They need to add more of those guys. They need to sign more of their draft picks and get them into Rochester ASAP. The reason, when you have enough of those players of great to good to fine prospects, basically A to C level guys, that is when you're in a position to make trades, to make that one big trade or two trades, to bring in some good talent.
Right.
The Sabres. Oh, yeah. That's why I say the Sabres aren't in a position, because people want to say trade Brendan Gooley and a first round pick and a roster player for Charlie Coyle. That's why. Well, who replaces Gooley in Rochester if you do that?
Probably Borgen. Maybe.
Is he ready for that?
Laaksonen.
Laaksonen's a guy.
But you have to. But
you still have to sign him first.
Yes,
and you want to see what he can do
on North American ice.
Exactly, it might not translate right away. Mm-hmm. So if it's not translating right away, and you need to lessen his minutes, why are you going to trade a guy who can take minutes, who's still young, who can take those minutes off of him?
Exactly.
So I want to see them start adding more to Rochester first.
Yes,
and that's where I think Bottrell's going down, because They could still sign Laxton after this season and bring him to Rochester. They could if they want to. If they really feel like he's ready for the AHL game, they can do that. They're going to sign Marcus Davidson, who's 20 right now, out of Sweden, and bring him to Rochester for next year. Potentially, you have those two. You'll have another year of Matage Pekar playing probably in juniors at Barry, and he's already signed. And you've got Luukkonen coming in next year, too. They need to continue to bring more of these guys in first. Jacob Bryce is another guy. He's a defenseman who's playing at Providence College right now, who they have until next year to sign him. They could do it a year early if they really want to. If they bring in more of these draft picks into Rochester and they perform well, then you can start looking at that big trade, because then you could offload one or two of them. That's why I look at the Leafs. They didn't trade their best prospects to get Jake Muzzin. They traded two guys that are in their top 10, but they didn't trade their best.
Hell, the Blues didn't trade their best prospect to get Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah, Tage Thompson was in their top 5, but he wasn't number 1.
Everyone was saying the words Robert Thomas, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, I was saying Jordan Kyrou. So, but the Leafs still have their two best prospects right now. And they're both in the AHL, Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren. If the Sabres want to make a trade like that, they have to give up their two best prospects to do it.
They don't have anything else in the mid-tiers.
Exactly.
Right.
They need more of those guys. They need more of those guys. Right. Of mid-tier guys, of B-level prospects who they have a good, really good chance at making the NHL and being fine players.
Like a JT Compher, for example.
Yep. I mean, he's in the NHL now.
He's in the NHL with Colorado. He's a solid middle six guy.
Top nine guy. Yeah. Like, Carl Grundstrom's a guy who will likely be on the Kings roster by the end of the season.
Exactly.
But he's definitely going to make the team next year. And Sean Durzi, who's a guy who he's not even signed yet. He's an unsigned player. And he's playing in the OHL right now. So you can put him in the OHL for another year. And then he comes into your system after next year.
Yep.
And he's looking good. Exactly. And you got the extra first round pick. So I want to see more of these guys come in. Bryson, Matias Samuelsson too, Laxinen, Marcus Davidson, Pekar, Luukkonen. I want to see more of these guys come in. And I want the Sabres are in a position where they need quantity, and then they can find the quality in that quantity.
Right.
It was like the same thing with the Bills. I want them to have more picks so that they can find that, because they need the quantity first so that they can find the quality in that. It's the same thing.
I still think that if they make two of the first-round picks, I'm okay. And if they use one of them and a low-end prospect to get a player, I'm cool. There's ways around it. There's ways you can do it. Hell, they didn't pay a first-round pick for Jeff Skinner.
I think it's very possible that they could trade one of the first-round picks, use another pick to draft, and then trade down with the other one and get more picks to do that.
Exactly.
That's very possible, too.
So my big thing, though, is with this, I can say maybe this team isn't so bad off if they don't do anything at the deadline. But now we're having a different conversation.
I think their biggest move is trading Nathan Beaulieu.
Yes. And that's the conversation, is they're not getting anything anymore, guys. They are trading something away.
Yeah.
And it's not going to... Well, they're not sellers. They're not necessarily selling. But what they are not buyers.
Yeah. They're going to stand pat.
They're going to stand pat.
Like I said, I think trading Nathan Beaulieu is the biggest move they make, and they can make that move. They don't even have to wait till the deadline to do it.
They might go ahead and look at someone else.
But that might be it. That's probably their only move, the only actual, like, NHL roster player that gets traded.
There might be someone else, and this is more of a, if you get a good call on this player, and that's Jake McCabe. If you get a good call for him,
sure.
25, RFA.
He's a guy who...
A guy who a team could pay something for at the deadline and want to have him for term. And you know what that means? It means more. You're getting more for a guy like that.
He's a guy who I think is prime for that one-for-one. I think everyone's talking about Ristolainen for that one-for-one. I think it's Jake McCabe.
It could be Jake McCabe.
I think it's more likely to be Jake McCabe because he, we talked about this at the beginning of the year that if they needed to add a forward, Jake McCabe is a prime guy to that they could move. And that makes that does make all the more sense, especially with a guy like Lawrence Pilot, who's jumped up in the depth charts. If they feel like Jake McCabe is more expendable and a one-for-one trade is there that they can bring in a forward to do that with, I'm all for it. Jake McCabe being an RFA really does help.
Because then he's going to get trade for him.
I think he's going to get control. Yeah, exactly. And he's going to get a little bit of money. He's definitely going to want money. I don't know how much. My immediate guess will be somewhere in the $4 million.
Yes.
But if you're a team who's trading away a like $4 million forward, replace that with a defenseman, that's easy.
That's easy. If a team needs depth on defense for a playoff push and they want to have control of him after the
season.
Or they think,
you know what, we really like this guy as a top four guy.
You get control of him and his rights after the season as well.
Yeah.
So there's ways about it, and if you get a favorable call for Jake McCabe, I'm saying you can go ahead and do it.
I only think that move is made in the offseason, though.
I don't know. I think it's because he still is on an expiring contract.
Remember, him being an RFA will still help with other teams because we've seen it already with the Sabres in the Scandella trade because they traded away Marcus Foligno, who was an RFA at the time.
That doesn't mean
It was a package deal and everything. I just think because McCabe is an RFA, it's more likely that it would happen in the offseason. Plus, those one-for-one trades still more often than not happen in the offseason, especially when it's NHL player for NHL player.
No, I'm not talking about a one-for-one on Jake McCabe. I'm thinking that if a team really wants to get some defensive help for a playoff push, McCabe's RFA status allows you to get a better pick out of it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's what I'm talking about with favorable trade talk.
Okay.
If you get a favorable call on Jake McCabe,
It has to be second round minimum. I think the only way McCabe gets traded at the deadline is if you're getting a high draft pick for him.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I mean, Dreiser Aguirre got a first round pick for Paul Gostad.
Brian Boyle landed a second round pick.
Yeah.
Again?
Yeah.
What does Brian Boyle do specially that gets him a second-round pick?
He's Brian Boyle? I mean,
offensively, what is that? Oh, yeah, like he's a great blue player, but is that worth a second-round pick?
If that sets the market, then...
So, again, if Jake McCabe, if it's a favorable call, that's the only other body I could see getting moved.
Sabres getting a third-round pick for Zemgus Girgensons confirmed?
One can only hope. I'm sorry, I'm done with Zemgus Girgensons.
I think Beaulieu will get traded.
I might actually be more done with Zemgus Girgensons than I am Vladimir Sobokin. I'm pretty done with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's about time they move on from him, from Girgensons.
At least I somehow could
trust... He's a replaceable fourth liner.
And you want to know the worst part? He is one of two people that I absolutely do not trust with the puck.
Yeah.
The other being...
Vladimir Sobokin.
I would trust Johan Larson in a heartbeat with the puck.
At least he's more responsible.
No, not even that. It's offensively, he's more dangerous.
Yeah.
Than Zemgus Girgensons. When Girgensons had that breakaway, I did not get excited. Why?
Because it's Zemgus Girgensons.
It was Zemgus Girgensons.
Yeah.
Girgensons somehow looked worse and more out of place than John Scott in an All-Star game.
Well,
don't well me.
It's an all-star game. You don't have to.
John Scott looked better than Girgensons did. These are facts. And Scott played in the 3-on-3 version, which requires you to be a fast skater.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Which he is not.
No.
I am just 110% done with Zemgus Girgensons. If you can find a way to trade him for something, congrats, do it. Then I could see an AHLer up here, like Olofsson or Nylander. By the way, they really have no centers in Rochester that can call up.
Yeah.
They've got nothing.
Yeah.
Wow, like, it's bad. Asplund's not ready.
No.
And like, and no
Daniel
one else.
Daniel Regan's the best center they could call up.
And that's not a prospect to me anymore.
Yeah. And the thing is, C.J. Smith's going to be in that position too. And so will Victor Olofsson. That's why I think next year is so critical for those two. They have to make the roster next year.
Mm-hmm.
Because Olofsson's 23. He's one of those guys. Remember, I was talking about they need to add more 18 to 22-year-olds. Well, 20 to 22-year-olds to Rochester, but they need to get more 18, 19-year-olds in the system. And get, at, you know, 18 to 22 in the system, 20, 22 to Rochester.
Yep.
Olofsson, they got Olofsson to Rochester at 23. C.J. Smith, you got him at 22, but that injury last year kind of derailed him a bit.
Yeah.
So
this is really just
next year for Smith and Olofsson especially. They have to make the roster next year. Otherwise, I don't think they ever will. And Olofsson, he's showing the promise now, but he needs to show it. Hopefully, he can show it at the NHL level.
Yeah. But yeah, like as we go back to the deadline on this, yeah, there's really only two names that I could think of that could get dealt. One is a for sure kind of thing with Nathan Beaulieu, but guess what? Yeah. Now Marco Scandella's out week to week, so maybe they hold on to him because they're a bunch of cruel jerks.
Yeah, but Casey Nelson's coming back.
He is back. He's with the team actually in Florida.
Yeah.
So he's back.
So
it's not coming back. He's back.
I don't think then they can still trade Beaulieu.
So then you have Hunwick as your extra, and then, oh, God.
Hunwick, yes, would be the extra until Scandella comes back. Or they call up Gooley.
Or they call up...
Who else could they call up?
You could see the look of discontent on my face.
No,
and you can
hear the discontent in my
voice.
See, he doesn't exist anymore.
No,
okay?
He does.
No, he doesn't exist anymore.
He does. This could happen again.
No, he doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, it could happen. And guess what? With Bill Housley, I think it could happen.
Sabi, he doesn't exist.
If Beaulieu gets traded, guess what? The words Matt Tennyson might be a thing again. Congratulations.
No, it'll be Brendan Gooley
first. We made it.
It'll be Brendan Gooley first.
No, it'll be Matt Tennyson first. Then they crater and lose out of the playoff race officially, and then Brendan Gooley gets up. That's how it would work.
Let's be real. Tennyson would still have to play.
That's how they fall out of the playoff race.
Only if Matt Tennyson gets called up.
That's the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
Because you don't win games with Matt Tennyson in the lineup. It's not something that's a frequent occurrence.
That is true.
And this is added to a team that can't win consecutive games. So, again, the Sabres are a bit of a strange thing right now.
Yeah.
By the way, mentioning trades.
Yeah.
Do you think we might see... let me get your thoughts on this, I guess.
Okay.
Before I say anything about the chances of it happening, I would just like to see your opinion on it.
Sure.
What would you think if the Sabres tried to pull a Canadiens-Coyotes trade in the offseason and go one-for-one Puljujärvi-Nylander?
Yeah, I wouldn't be against it. Nylander, he has been better this year.
Might benefit from a different team.
Might benefit from a fresh start. But, and Puljujärvi kind of is in the same boat as well. Both
Puljujärvi's getting dragged up and down the press box.
Both have gotten plagued by not being developed the right way, where Nylander should have went back to the OHL in 16-17 instead of going to Rochester at 18 years old.
Yep.
And Puljujärvi would have benefited by going to the AHL at 18 years old because when he was there at 18, he was really good.
Mm-hmm.
And he should have stayed there for the whole year.
And they dragged him up and down and up and down, and now it's up and down in the press box and back to the AHL.
And now he's injured.
It's really a different... Puljujärvi,
you know what? I would not be against that one bit.
Now, what do you think the chances of that would be?
I think it's very low. only because the talks of Puljujärvi being dealt at the deadline right now. And knowing Edmonton, they would absolutely do it to try to make the playoffs this year because they're Edmonton.
They're so dumb.
Yeah. I don't know if Puljujärvi will actually get traded at the deadline, especially now with him being injured.
Yeah.
But if the talks, knowing Edmonton, I don't think that's a trade they want to make. They would want to trade Puljujärvi for an established NHL forward. But again, however, I think the idea of that is very intriguing, and if it does actually happen, I would be all for it.
Yeah.
So that's my answer to your question.
Yeah, I think it would be an interesting little concept if the Sabres would look into something like that with Alex Nylander at this point. Because I'm constantly wondering, why the hell has this guy not gotten called up yet?
Or, like, what happened to him? Like, Puljujärvi, when he was in 2016, he was looked at as that third guy behind Matthews and Laine.
Yeah, a lot of people ripped Columbus apart for taking
Dubois. For not taking him, yeah. For taking Dubois third.
And that man's looking pretty solid at this point.
He's their number one center. Yeah. Yeah, Puljujärvi was looked at as that dynamite prospect. You know, he was so good in 2016 with Laine and Aho in the World Juniors, winning a gold medal.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he the leader in points as well?
I think he was tied. Yeah, I think he was. He was right up there. Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's something that we definitely can throw that one down the line, but.
I think the chances.
Then again, we were like, let's go get Alex Galchenyuk, and then the next thing you know. Arizona stepped in. We're like, why? And then the Sabres go, don't worry. We traded for Jeff Skinner. Hang on, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we were all like, let's go get Alex Galchenyuk. That would be pretty cool, you know, get your 2C that way.
Yeah.
Fill up your top six.
Then he goes to Montreal. We're like, damn.
Yeah, then Domi gets traded to Montreal for Galchenyuk. We're like, damn it. We use that.
And then Sabres are like, here's a Jeff Skinner trade here. We're like, wait, what?
And then a quiet day in August.
Tim Allen,
you got to put the high pitch too at the end of it. There you go.
Yeah. I loved Home Improvement growing up. That's a great show.
So again, there's something to that, and it's obviously something we'll have to punt down to the offseason if Puljujärvi is still available, because we talked about Galchenyuk for ages throughout the summer.
Yeah.
But again, who knows at this point? I mean, but I'm going to have faith in Botchwell. And you want to know what I'm actually low-key excited about? If the Sabres are a team that is too far out of the playoffs, I'm excited to see what Botchwell does with college free agents. Because that is some of the woodwork that has put Pittsburgh back into the relevance.
Yes.
Is what he has done with names like Connor Sherry, Brian Rust, Jake Guentzel.
Well, Jake Guentzel was drafted. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Jake Guentzel, I will just clarify that. Jake Guentzel was drafted by Pittsburgh,
okay,
and then went to and then obviously played in college.
Yes, but again,
Rust
and Sherry were undrafted free agents.
Yes,
and you've seen the success, like some success with getting Casey Nelson in here, Evan Rodriguez, CJ Smith.
Yep,
those are guys that
strangely enough,
Tim Murray brought in.
Yeah, I know, right?
But he got something right when it came to not needing to spend a bunch of money or assets on getting a player. Once value is not involved, the guy actually didn't do a terrible job.
It's low risk.
Huh. As I roll my eyes, Tim Murray, you can step on a bunch of Legos.
And Botchwell, so far, he has done that. He signed Andrew Ogilvie.
Yes, Ogilvie is a guy
and
that they brought in.
I mean, you're looking at just college free agents, but just look at young guys in general. Lawrence Pilot.
A guy that was not drafted.
Not an undrafted guy, yeah.
But like I said,
he's shown that he can do that already. Andrew Ogilvie obviously still needs a lot of time.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if they can add a college free agent, give him a Sabres sweater for the last 6-7 games of the season. Let's see what we can get from Botchwell here.
Yeah, find some college free agents or European free agents who are in their early 20s who were never drafted and give them an opportunity and see what they can do.
And just don't Victor Antip in the situation.
Oh, yeah. That's obvious.
All right. So, Frank, I think this one's going to be a shorter one today.
You did do a little thing,
and I'm not going to argue about the fact that Columbus should trade Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky with you again today.
Yeah, let's not do that.
But I need to make my daily mention of that. So there that is. I got that checked off now. We're good. By the way, three teams, including Columbus, tied at 69 points.
Nice.
And Carolina's at 68. Sabres sitting at 63. So Flyers sitting at 63. Flyers, if they remain hot, could be a problem. And maybe Columbus should trade Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky before they fall out of the playoffs. Okay, I'm done. I swear I'm done. I just want Jarmo Kekalainen to not look like a total boob in all of this. Why? We have a soft spot for Columbus.
Yeah.
Cam Atkinson.
Yeah.
Never forget. Ending the misery that was the tank.
Yeah. We do have a couple questions, though.
Okay, what do you got?
This is from Connor Hellwig on Twitter.
Okay. That's right. I opened up a little bit of a tweet bag.
@C_Hellwig12. Who wins a playoff game first, Bills or Sabres? My answer is the Sabres.
I agree.
I think it's very possible if the Bills make the right moves, they can make the playoffs next year. Winning a game is completely different, though. If they make the playoffs next year, it's likely one and done.
I don't know about one and done. My biggest obstacle...
It would depend on the matchup.
No, my reason for the Sabres is this, and it's this only. I expect both teams to make a push for the playoffs next year.
Yeah.
The Bills
would technically make the playoffs first, though.
No, they wouldn't, and here's why. They're not making it next year.
Okay, you don't think they're making it. Okay.
The Patriots still exist.
Yeah, I'm saying if the Bills make the right
moves. I'm saying it frankly.
I'm not saying win the division, obviously.
I'm saying it frankly. The best chance at making the playoffs in the AFC is winning your division. And guess what? You cannot ever do in the AFC East.
That's true.
With Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Because the wild card, as we've seen, has become chaos incarnate.
Always is. Yeah.
And for 1 year that Buffalo had the right luck to make it, I've got about eight seasons in a 17-year drought where it didn't happen the right way that the chips needed to fall.
But if the chips fall that way next year, and they do, it's highly likely that it's a one and done. They get in the wild card rounds and they lose the game.
Yeah, if you face an AFC South team, I wouldn't say it's one and done-er.
I mean, unless it's like, I mean, Indy's pretty good.
Actually, even the North, too. The North's not invincible.
Yeah.
So, if you get one of those matchups,
it would depend on the matchup, but I think the chances of it are still very...
Yes, they're not as good. Yeah. And if the Sabres, where half the league makes the playoffs...
And you also play a minimum of four games.
You play a minimum of four games.
You have a better chance to win at least one.
Yes. You have a better chance to win.
But yeah, we agreed.
But my main reason is the Patriots still exist.
Yeah.
Tom Brady's still there. Bill Belichick's still there. Bills aren't winning a playoff game before the Sabres.
We had another one.
Sorry, Connor.
Yeah. From Michael Fisher at MJ Fisher 2, or the second. We kind of talked about it already. Should Fahalski be fired at the end of the season, or should he be given more time? We agree, more time.
More time, but it's for different reasons.
Yeah. He asked at least until Thanksgiving or Christmas.
That's exactly my timeline for him.
Yeah, that's exactly the timeline.
My reasoning, though, for Housley is not because of Housley. It's because of what the team would look like, the organization, from an outside perspective. How are you going to learn free agents if you know that the coach is going to constantly change after 2 years?
How are you going to get a good coach if you're constantly changing after
exactly.
2 years?
I still think Chris Taylor would be the call if Housley were to get
fired. I think Chris Taylor is the first option.
Yes,
I agree.
I'm not worried about that. Because for Chris Taylor, it becomes there's 31 of these opportunities and there's going to be only 32 coming within a couple of years.
Yes.
I'm going to take this.
Yes.
Not that he'd be desperate. I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're giving consideration.
It's his first chance.
If you're giving consideration for one of 32 jobs in the entire world, well, you're not often going to say no. You're not going to bet on yourself to see if the Amherst can go ahead and run for the Calder Cup and you can get another chance at one.
Yeah.
For another NHL head coaching gig.
Yeah.
So, and you would know the players within the organization. Housley, it's not about Housley himself to me anymore. I'm done trying to defend him because he makes head-scratching decisions that continue to baffle everybody's minds. I thought, why the hell did you pull the goalie when you're on the power play like that?
You know what?
Which, by the way...
You know what?
By the way, it was not just the fact that he did that. It was when he did it on the power play. When they're trying to advance into the zone. Frank, tell me what has been the worst freaking thing about the power play this year?
Yeah,
the zone entry.
Yeah.
And guess what?
They're
entering the zone. It's a mess as usual. Carter Hutton has now left the net. There's a turnover. It's dumped down. And
goal.
Goal. And there's no risk. You can just slap that SOB down the ice.
Here's my take on that particular sequence.
Wow, man. I got mad just now thinking about the power play.
I don't mind the idea of pulling Hutton when you're on the power play and making it a 6-on-4.
I don't mind it. It was when.
It was the timing.
If it was an offensive zone draw,
and
take
I think
it.
That's yeah, and I think that
I'm ready to I swear want, about the power play because I'm still wow.
That's why
I'm
I keep
really,
asking this question. That's why
really
I keep asking
the power play.
That's why I keep asking this question. You know, it's two questions. How much blame we put all the blame on Housley? Why not the assistant coaches?
I've been saying the assistant coaches need to get fired for a while now.
Yeah, I think it's more so the assistant coaches need to get cleaned
Davis
out.
Davis Payne needs to stop being able to draw up a power play. Is it Payne or is it Chris Hite?
I don't think it's either one. I don't know.
Steve Smith is in charge of the defense.
Steve Smith is in charge? Like, I thought Chris Hodge was. No, Chris Hodge might be the power play because he's up in the booth, in the press box.
I thought it was Davis Payne.
I thought Davis Payne just worked.
See if it's on the website.
I've looked. I've looked. It's not there. I've looked. You can't really. It's just they have Davis
Payne. Either
way,
I need someone else commanding the freaking power play.
I think what we're seeing is all three of them kind of need to go.
It's not even about all three of them need to go. Whoever's the one in charge of the power play needs to stop being in charge of the power play. I don't care if he gets fired or not. I just want him not doing the power play anymore because it is, again, it's causing me to be ready to swear because of the fact of how bad the power play entry is.
Let's
drop it back and make Jack Eichel do everything. Oh, hey, guess what? Teams have clogged up the blue line because you're not moving anymore because you dropped it back for Jack Eichel to run in on the power play.
My whole thing with the assistant coaches and Housley is what's their communication factor like?
Frank, I'm sorry. You're going to have to hold on to this point because I'm about to start screaming again.
Oh God!
It's over. I've lost it. I freaking lost it at this point. Because in addition to this stupid, crappy entry to the power play, which again is just a drop pass, another drop pass, and it's Jack Eichel or Rasmus Dahlin, no one else, and everyone's plugged up at the blue line. Nobody's moving their feet. Why? Because there's been two drop passes. Hey, dog, we got your drop pass, and we decided we're going to fit it up with another drop pass. And then when you're in the zone, when something has actually somehow been established, there are three people that are involved with the puck. That's it. Jeff Skinner is in the slot, and guess what? Nobody cares about vacating him. Because all they do is pass between three freaking people. Reinhardt is rarely used in the cycle. Skinner is never used at all, despite, oh, by the way, having 37 goals. Is it 37 or 36?
I think he's at 37.
37 goals! No, sure. He doesn't. The only time he touches the puck is when one of those three point men cough it up. That's it. It's three people touching the puck. Three. I am so sick of this power play. Mother bleeper, this power play needs to go. Okay, I'm done. I got it out of my system. I really freaking hate the power play.
Okay.
And going 0-for-3 in a game where you desperately needed a goal. And once again, seeing your power play unit get zero time established. They had one dangerous chance last night against the Devils. One. It was a nice feed to Dahlin. Yeah. Darlene does ring it off the pipe.
Yep.
But other than that, your power play's been useless. Skinner scored for you because he saved a turnover against the Rangers.
Yeah.
And yes, it counts in the statistic for the power play, but it didn't look good.
That's why I...
Wow, I hate the power play. I really hate
the power play. That's why I wonder how well Housley and the assistant coaches are working together.
I'm sorry, but if I'm the head coach and I don't like the power play, we get a different power play method. So guess what? It has to at least be kosher for Phil, at minimum.
Yeah.
But guess what that power play also looked like? Shades of what Nashville does.
I have to watch Nashville games from when Housley was there.
When you saw them in the Stanley Cup against Pittsburgh.
I have to check that out. I don't remember much.
There was oftentimes there was one drop pass being made while entering the zone.
And it's usually guys like Philip Forsberg entering the zone.
Or you have mobile defensemen like a Roman Josi or a PK Subban.
And Ryan Nelson is playing really well.
They have more options on wheelers that can carry the puck.
Yeah.
And guess what? The Sabres do have those guys. I would trust Jeff Skinner to get into the zone with it. I would trust Sam Reinhart to get into the zone. The dude's smart. I would trust Casey Mittelstadt with his mitts to get it into the zone. But instead, it's always the same person every time. And guess what teams do? They key on it.
Yeah, you key.
And there has been no adjustment to it at all. I got to stop talking about the power play, Frank.
Okay.
I'm going to swear.
Okay. So that's why I'll continue. Continue on. What is Housley's communication factor with the assistant coaches? If it's not there in Botro season, he needs to tell them, hey, you got to fire these guys. They're not getting it done.
If it's not there, he's not a good head coach.
That's who.
He's the one hiring these guys, right?
Was that Housley who hired him?
Coach fills the coaching staff. That's how it goes in pro sports. You're never in hockey, you're never forced an assistant coach.
In hockey, you're never.
Like sometimes in football you're forced an assistant or coordinator.
Who is the assistants? Because all three guys are in their second year with this team.
Yes. Which means Housley brought them all in.
That's a bad. I don't remember who are the assistant coaches when Bilesma was here. Bob Woods was the power play
coach,
obviously,
yes.
Because they had the second best power play. Who are the other assistants, though?
Why'd you have to remind me the power play was awesome?
Yes, I know.
Why? Oh, my God. It sucks caring again! Damn it!
Here's my last question to Housley. Would any other coach do things differently? I think the only thing that is done differently that other coaches would do is the power play. They would try to do other things.
Here's my thing. In the zone, they try to mimic what looks like Washington's power play, where it's Ovechkin and Backstrom on those wing sides, and then you've got Kuznetsov working down low. Carlson's your main point man, and then Oshie's in the slot.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you don't have the passers nor the ambition, apparently, to do what Washington does. Because you know what Washington does?
You also don't have a TJ Oshie. Because
Skinner's your Oshie. Done.
I would try to put Skinner more as a behind the net guy, kind of where
that's Reinhart. And I'm okay with that. But you want to know the thing? Kuznetsov behind the net
gets the puck.
Reinhart doesn't get the puck in the power play.
Right, so I want Skinner to do that because Skinner gets the puck.
No. Reinhart's the better passer. I want Reinhart behind the net. I want Reinhart to get the puck behind the power play. I want Reinhart to get the puck in the office behind the power play.
Let me finish. I want Reinhart in front of the net.
Tipper topper.
Yes. Reinhart's the better guy for the net Reinhart, from presence. They need that. They need more of those kind of. That's the big thing with this team. They need more of those guys who are going to get to the net.
They need to give the puck to those guys. It's Eichel, Darlene, Risto. Eichel, Darlene, Risto. Risto to Darlene. Darlene to Risto. Risto to Eichel. Eichel back to Risto.
And if you have a guy who is parking his ass right in front of that net, you're going to get penalty killers to key in on them. Especially if for one time They leave that guy wide open, and he scores.
And you know what helps with that with Washington's power play? When Kuznetsov gets the puck and feeds it to Oshie. What a freaking concept to have someone other than the same three players touching the puck. Christ.
I'm also with you on that, okay? I'm also within that. I'm just saying.
Send the power play to the freaking sun. Why did we get back on the power play? You pissed me off again. Damn it. I'm really holding it back. I want to drop all of the F-bombs about the power play right now, and I can't. I cannot. I have to stay civil.
Yes, you do. I get it. I get it.
This has been the Leftovers Podcast with Derek Kramer and Frank Arcuri.
Yeah.
And I'm really upset. And I shouldn't be. This team is mediocre. And I shouldn't be this upset. But I continue to see a floundering power play, and that's one of the reasons they are mediocre as all hell. Frank, we did a thing.
Yes.
So why don't you tell the people what you were referencing when you said that I did a thing?
You did a thing with now we're doing the 11-day power play.
We are doing the 11-day power play. I'm doing it twice.
I'm probably doing it twice.
Frank might be doing it twice. And you know what? It's awesome.
Yeah.
We have a date for one of our skates. It is July 11th from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Yes.
We got the 6 to 9. Nice. At Harbor Center. My fundraising page is up. My captain's fundraising page is up. Frank's will be up shortly. And we will have the links on our Twitter handles. I'm at Derek Kramer, WGR. Mine is pinned already.
My Twitter handle is at Frank Arcuri, and when I have the page up, it will also be pinned.
That's at Frank, A-R-C-U-R-Y. And I mentioned something on mine with my pinned tweet. I am not above shenanigans for getting me to my goal.
Me too.
So, please, tweet us ideas for shenanigans to make us suffer momentarily for the sake of a good cause. For fighting cancer, proceeds go to Roswell Park, Camp Good Days, and I'm forgetting one. I know I'm forgetting one. So let's not worry about that part as much. Why don't you go to the page, donate, and you'll find out what the third cause is that I am forgetting about right now.
We'll both have the same goal.
$1,000.
Yes. And
that's big.
And that's a big goal. And if both goals are hit, Derek and I will partake in some kind of shenanigans based off of whatever you give us.
Yes. As a matter of fact, if we elevate and manage to break that goal and really shatter something, I will go extravagant. I will try something.
I'll
try something.
We'll make the shenanigans go even higher. As to whatever it is. Well, we can have like a little list of like if we hit this goal, we'll do something. If we hit this goal, we'll do this or something like that.
It's like a promise for more to come.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I guess if I hit 500, we might as well do the precursor, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So should I get in like contact with like Chris Bandura and see if Sabres PR can really hook us up with something stupid?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I mean, we got to do something like that because especially when Steve Dangle had done something himself.
I'm not eating a pepper.
No.
I'm not throwing up.
I mean, we had him on the podcast before.
I'm not doing
before,
it. I'm not throwing
and
up for this.
Steve, I think I think it was 10,000.
Guy's got that public profile.
Yeah.
We don't.
he would eat a pepper live on his podcast. Ugh. And he
not
did.
Not eating one of those. I'm not doing it. We saw one of our former engineers do that, and his day was ruined. I'll never forget that.
I mean, one simple one that we've already got was you eating vegetables, which, yes, that which oddly enough for Derek, that doesn't happen.
Backstory, I don't eat vegetables. I think the curse is upon your food. So unhealthy.
So one of the goals will be Derek eats broccoli.
And, oh, that's like one of the worst looking ones.
Yes. So that would have to be the one that you eat then.
Jesus. You guys are trying to make me healthy for a 3-hour hockey skate? Wait. Yeah, you guys are trying to make me healthy for a 3-hour hockey skate?
Yeah, so what's the danger in that? I'm gonna film myself shoving a piece of broccoli in your mouth. And you have to eat it.
I feel slightly uncomfortable by this. And by slightly,
it's a mini tree. Shut up.
Exactly. If I wanted to eat a tree, I'd go outside.
It's delicious.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No.
I just had broccoli on Sunday. It was delicious.
You try to feed it.
I had cheese with it.
I just about called myself a child.
My
argument was seriously about to be, you try to feed a child a piece of broccoli and see what happens.
And Derek's the older one.
And yet here I am trying to defend myself, and the first thing it came up to was feed a child broccoli. That's not good on me. That does not look good on me.
No. Come on, we can set that as one of the lower ones. Be easy.
Thanks for listening to the Leftovers Podcast. I'm Derek Kramer, who made himself look very stupid just now.
I'm Frank R. Curry.
And you've been listening to Leftovers Podcast here on WGR550.com on demand audio.
Florida tomorrow, Tampa Thursday. They play Tampa Thursday.
Watch them win that. Watch them lose three straight to the likes of the Rangers, the Devils, and the Panthers,
and then beat Tampa.
You know how pissed off that would make everyone?
No matter what, we're going to be pissed off.
Yeah, that's what the season's been. We'll be right back.